Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and we are here today to talk about a new sci-fi thriller called Monolith, out in theaters on February 16th from Wellgo USA. And with me today are director Matt Vesely and actor Lily Sullivan to talk about this very intriguing little movie. Welcome.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
First off, this is a very tense movie. The tension and the curiosity ramps up as we go through it. And Lily, your performance is sometimes speculative, like just you're totally skeptical, but you're curious. You want to give the mystery a chance, and then you have unhinged moments, which are kind of brilliant.
Slightly unhinged.
Just a little bit. Now, Matt, talk about this story, because it takes a while to get into it, and then there are so many little side trail rabbit holes to explore. And when they come back together, I'm curious. It's like, where did this little maze of mystery passages come from?
Well, Monolith was born out of a lab called Film Lab New Voices here in South Australia and Adelaide, where I'm from. And the idea of the lab was that you would go in as a team, like first time feature filmmakers would go in as a team and develop a project for a small budget. So Lucy Campbell, the writer, and Bettina Hamilton, the producer, and I, we applied, we kind of successfully got in this lab. We had a year to develop a script, and we knew that if we got through to the end and we were successful in this lab, we would have this kind of small budget to work with to make the film. And so you're trying to like come up with something that's going to be that you're going to be able to make for that small budget, but also that's going to be like more interesting or defined by it. You're not squeezing a film into that budget. You are making something that is like almost has an advantage because of the small budget, because you can do something that on a bigger budget film you'd never be able to do. So our challenge was like, can you do like an X-Files episode, like an alien invasion story with one actor? That was the kind of birth of the idea. Can we do that? And it was Bettina who had this idea of, I could be a podcaster. There's something interesting about, you know, the way truth is easily manipulated in audio storytelling and sort of how journalism has shifted because of new media. And so we sort of birthed from there, and Lucy went off and kind of came up with this kind of crazy story about these strange alien artifacts that are appearing around the world. But it was always about servicing, that idea. And if it's going to be a story about one actor telling us a story, then thematically it's going to be about, can we trust this person? And can we trust anyone who's telling us a story? Whose perspective is the story coming from? These were all the thematic ideas that kind of built the film. And then one thing that Lucy and I spoke a lot about was that it was really important as well that on top of that kind of, you know, that thematic layer, that there was a really like kind of fun alien strange mystery that was real, that's happening, that is not just metaphor, that is like, you know, there is a kind of rabbit hole to fall into, much like our character does. The audience is falling into a similar rabbit hole of seeing details and symbols and ideas and hearing stories and trying to figure out, much like Lily's character is, whether they can believe any of it.
Now, Lily, talk about how you approached doing this story with no feedback other than disembodied voices over electronic equipment and a turtle.
Yeah, that is such a, the feedback is such a great one to describe. The when you remove another body, another set of eyes, another person, it's like a whole other set of like language and subtext to a film, which I didn't realize so much until obviously doing this job. When you strip that back, it's wild how your imagination enhances. It's like taking away a sense in a way that it felt like when shooting this, and, you know, actually plugging in having the like noise cancelling headphones and just a voice talking to me, you know? And then even like setting the scene before, you know, we would shoot, it was such a bizarre thing to kind of sit alone and ruminate and wait for the voice to start talking to me and then to also be the voice to other people. It was quite abstract and odd, and yet. I had to approach it like theater though as well, just because 15 days shooting and being so dialogue heavy, basically just learning the script front to back. So then once we started shooting, you could just kind of free fall and just be able to then hear as each day came. It's like if it was already in the back of my mind, like completely, that then I could learn it roughly before I went in each day to then be able to listen to these like 10-minute conversations or like really long scenes and just old dialogue. So it was just, I was saying it before as well. I'm just so grateful actually that it was 15 days. So it was just like once approaching it and being alone, I think the only actor in front of the camera, which could get quite overwhelming at points, to kind of not have too much time to think about it, to let the free fall happen. So 15 days was kind of a gift at the end.
Yeah, that's a very tight shooting schedule, but there's not a whole lot to juggle. It's you, a house, and a turtle.
Totally. And you actually have to sit in mind and be an actor being filmed, and then there's a lot to juggle inside at all times. It's one of the funniest things. It's just, when you don't have other people to kind of make sounds with and bounce off of, it's kind of like your own little echo chamber of self, like just sitting there and being exposed weirdly. You get to like the seventh hour of being filmed alone, and things get weird.
There are also choices that we make as well. As you say, someone, there's not a lot to wrangle, but as filmmakers, it's like that they were deliberate choices too. We know we don't have a lot of time. So if we can restrict like what we need to work with logistically to just like this one actor, we just everything is about supporting her and to deliver an interesting performance. It means that we can make really bold choices constantly. We're not there just struggling to kind of complete the film. Actually, our schedule, as tight as that is, was quite felt quite free. And every choice that, Mike, the cinematographer, and I were making was just, how can we make this more interesting? What's the boldest, strangest way we can shoot this scene? Like, what kind of choices can we make that speak to what's happening internally for this character? And the big challenge of the film was like making a film that is one actor and a lot of dialogue feel very cinematic and actually feel very visual. And I think that's something that we're really proud of, is that there is a sense of a growing visual language through the film, in a type of film that often doesn't, that's often just about a voice. We were like, no, we really want this to have a strong visual storytelling element. And hopefully that, I don't know if the audience thinks about that as they're watching it, but they feel it. I think they do feel that kind of shift and change and growing tension and all those things.
Well, for me, the emotional connection of the conversations she's having with these people she's researching, she's talking to her boyfriend, there is an investment in those characters or her connection to them, even though you can't see them. How did you go about directing people who were never going to be seen, just heard?
It's interesting. I mean, on set, because again, like I think if you were we're a bigger budget film, we'd fly all our crew, all our cast out, and like have them in the other room, and Lily could act off them. We didn't have that luxury, so we had one actor, and Suya Nathan, who plays Paula in the film, do all the voices. So she's in it. She's like down the hall, in a walk-in wardrobe in this huge house, sitting on a microphone, literally pumped into Lily's headphones, like calling her on the phone, basically. And I only realized like what quite late in the shoot that I could hear it and Suya as well, because I had headphones, but the whole crew couldn't. So they were just listening to Lily talk to no one, which was must have been a strange thing for them. That's all about supporting Lily on screen and just making sure that, and Suya's just giving Lily whatever she needs, because we know we're going to replace that performance. So whatever she needs. And then in post-production, yeah, we went back and we cast all those roles and kind of edited them in. I mean, the strangest thing, the cast that we have is a very experienced Australian cast, actually. They're all like really kind of top of their game actors in TV and film in Australia. We're very lucky to get them, and we were able to get them because we could, just do one recording session with them for 3 or 4 hours and do their scene, and they could get out. It's hard directing these beautiful actors, and because we'd shot the film, they kind of have to fit Lily's performance, and that's like a slightly strange thing for them to be like, okay, like a little bit faster because Lily kind of interrupts you there, you know, which is not ideal, but because they're such beautiful actors, they're able to rise to it. And what I realized was what the most important thing with directing those voices, as opposed to not being seen on screen, is how much storytelling they have to do, you know, how much they have to kind of evoke with their voice is a really interesting thing that maybe when they're on screen, they wouldn't have to do. And so, you know, Terry Crawford, who plays Klaus, the art collector, is a really interesting example of that, that like when we were casting that role, we went through, like, tried some, you know, German actors, some, you know, we're trying to see who we could find. And we went with Terry's Australian. He does a great German accent. But we went with Terry because his voice has this kind of this gravelly, interesting quality. And when he speaks, he's able to slow down and really drag you in. And so that storytelling aspect becomes so, so important when you can't see their face. Yeah. And the other really important element, which really shouldn't be undervalued, is like how important it is that Lily is engaging when she's listening, not when she's speaking. So we had there was a scene, it was the same scene, that Klaus scene, about 3 days in, we were shooting that scene. There's quite a long section where he's talking and we're on this very big close-up of Lily, you know, we're like kind of eyes and to mouth, and we're watching her just listen behind the split. And it was so captivating, like watching her kind of try to figure out what he's saying and the kind of thoughts, you know, ticking behind her eyes. And it was like that, how valuable it is to watch someone listen is such an interesting thing, I think, about this film, that you're really engaging with a person hearing. And that is unique. And we've felt so lucky to have Lily in that moment. Of all the other things, you know, of course, she's got to be able to say her lines well and emote and all these things, but she's got to be able to listen. It's so, and that must be so hard, Lily, right? Like to be able to stay focused and engaged in those moments. Yeah.
For sure. To not look at yourself or to not have that bird's eye view moment or that moment where you're like, yeah, just staying.
You can't break or like disengage. You got to like stay in there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So funny. It was, yeah, it was a wild, wild experience. Listening, who would have thought it was so hard?
Yeah. Lily, talk a little bit about what your approach to how to engage with the different voices you were talking to, because some of them sounded crazy, some of them you wanted to believe their story, but you kept digging, fishing for more bits of what you perceived as real to hook your story onto. And that interaction, that balance you played between a believer and skeptic and am I going crazy myself now, was fun to watch. Talk about that approach.
Yeah, that was, Matt monitored that a lot as well. Like you wouldn't give loads and loads of notes, but it would always be like, especially with the different people that I'm interacting with, where it's like, okay, you're at the point where you just need to start just pulling as much as you can out and see if there's anything to grab. It's just always dancing with what level of manipulation, what level of, once she sort of gets going, where then there's the desire to actually have found something and the desperation, because you find her at this place where she's just crawling back for, like, you know, redemption and wanting to have something, you know, and also taking a massive sort of ego hit of dropping into doing a clickbait podcast in her head, you know, doesn't feel like real journalism. So there's that level of like where she's applying old tricks and things that she would do, I guess, with more serious content that she's creating in interviews. And then finding moments where she's just actually hearing someone in quite a desperate place and weirdly trying to pull more out of them, but realizing it's going nowhere, but this is, you know, hitting someone's Achilles in some way. So it was really fun, just depending who I was talking to, what level it would pull out of her just manipulating, or also then when it was just about the desire so badly for it to be real, and to kind of actually, what does someone do when they actually believe something that is something they can't explain, and how to try to contain that. So it was really fun to find that dance of manipulation and then also desire for it to be the truth, because it serves her and then also scares her. So yeah,
it's about playing an action always too, right? This was in the writing as well. It's really interesting that obviously when there's more physical action, that's, it can be quite explicit, like what someone's trying to do in a scene, whether they're trying to get And obviously, these are long conversations, so it can fall into this like rhythm of like they're just talking. But we were Lucy, the writer, was really clear about making sure that Lily's character always has like some kind of goal within any of those scenes and a tactic to get it. So there's always choices that she's making of like, okay, now I'm going to say this in order to get you to say more, or I'm going to tug on your heartstrings, or I'm going to appeal to your emotion, or whatever it is. She's always got like an angle in to try to affect.
And even how the dialogue story is written. Yeah. Even the way that I like, yeah, again, not having to change anything. Like, I think it was like maybe an or something, something stupid, or just saying like, you know, it was one word, because it was like, you could feel like I didn't have to learn the lines so like clearly, because it would always, whatever the person had said to me, the way I could memorize it, whoever I was interviewing would trigger the way Lucy and you guys had conducted the dialogue, that I was just like, I knew what I was going to say next, and it would give me this, it would spurt like an intention of what I could get next from whatever they said, which was just really, and it just had to be, you know. I think when I read the words on the page, I was just like, I could just feel that rhythm, you know, and not be scared of boring the hell out of people with just me talking, you know, to find that safety in the dialogue and the specificity.
Well, I am going to avoid spoilers and just mention to our audience that the movie ends very interestingly with lots of questions that don't get answered. And was that intentional, to let people decide for themselves if what they've heard was true or what's going to happen is going to be true?
Yeah, there was two really important goals that we had. And one was that in that third act, it would escalate in a really exciting, visceral way. And again, don't want to spoil too much, but there is definitely a big shift, as you know. There's like a push into a kind of new territory in that third act that's really thrilling, hopefully, like exciting, kind of much more visceral compared to the kind of first, you know, hour of the film, kind of really punches up. But as you say, then we get to the end and there is still some ambiguity around it. And the truth is that, like, you know, it's a film about truth, and it's a film about what we can believe from the stories that we're told, and how much we bring ourselves, how much meaning we impart on our, you know, like, do our own experiences influence how we believe a story, or what we take from a story, or whether we read too much into a story, all these things. That's what's going on for Lily's podcast, the people she's talking to. And so you want the audience to have that same experience. And so that ending is really about, you're absolutely right. It's like, we want the audience to be asking those questions. We want the audience to kind of be engaged in that storytelling process in the same way that the character is. And so, you know, I think we get asked questions about that ending quite a lot, and I sort of don't answer them, because whatever your experience of that story is true. It's like that's what stories are. Is they're about a process of not just the teller, but the listener, or the receiver, or the reader, or the viewer. So yeah, it's exciting. I'm also super a believer in that, like, in these big mystery stories, if you do answer everything, it's just, it's never satisfying. You think that's what you want, but you don't. It just kills everything. It demystifies it. And,
let's the air out.
Yeah, I think it lets the air out. Yeah.
Well, Lily, Matt, I want to thank you for your time today. The movie is Monolith, out in theaters and on digital February 16th from Wellgo USA. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi. Pseudopod, the free horror fiction podcast brought to you by escape artists.
It makes my bones chatter against each other, and you sit up in bed. I scream as I remain a statue, and then the fury in me becomes a raging, hot thing in my chest.
Each week, one story told well.
There, writhing in lurid agony upon the floor, was a short creature, perhaps 2 feet tall. It was covered with red, wire-like hair on every inch of its exposed flesh.
from the most chilling and unsettling storytellers of the genre.
The wind's up now, and the sackcloth is blowing in black tatters round it, making it writhe like the worms, only that ain't all sackcloth.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or find us on the web at pseudopod.org, and on Patreon under EA Podcasts.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of slice of sci-fi.
The director, Matt, said it best. Whatever you experienced while watching that movie is what you interpret the end to be. I can appreciate the artistic choice to leave that many questions unanswered, that many dangling threads. But for me personally, it's not a satisfying ending because there are too many questions. Sometimes the mystery, the ambiguity of a story's conclusion can be a fun thing, but for me, it didn't work with this story, with Monolith. Now, the rest of the movie is really, really engaging, compelling. The curiosity that goes into digging into this mystery, this phenomenon with these black bricks is an interesting story build. The circling around, the connection to something from her childhood was an interesting move. And I don't know, there's a very, very large conspiracy going around, or there was a massive, massive gaslighting effort going on. And, you know, like the director says, like Matt says, you can interpret it however you wish based on your experience with watching the movie. Either way, interesting film. Out from Wellgo USA, February 16th, technically yesterday. And it's out in theaters and on digital. Not sure this one benefits from being seen on the big screen, other than to support indie movies, that is. But the visuals would not gain anything from being seen on a huge theatrical screen, for me anyway. But how about you? Are there any indie sci-fi thrillers that you'd like to see? Are there any indie sci-fi thrillers that you'd like to see get made? Let me know. Call in. The number is 602-635-6976. Or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can also chat with me, ask your questions over on Twitter @sliceofscifi or over on Blue Sky @sliceofscifi.com. You can also come by the website, sliceofscifi.com, and leave your comment or question in the discussion section for this episode. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple or following on Podchaser, please consider leaving us a review to let everyone know you are enjoying the show and maybe they should check it out for themselves. Sometime this year, Google Podcasts supposedly will be going away. Not sure when that's going to happen, but apparently they're staging this rollout. They say they're going to be moving stuff over to YouTube podcasts, and I'm not sure this show would benefit from YouTube podcasts. I don't know what's going to happen. If this is a show you would listen to on YouTube, let me know, because I'm already working on putting the old Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas episodes on YouTube as a podcast. So, yeah, that's a project. I'd like to thank everyone who's currently helping to support our efforts here for the entire Slice of Sci-Fi universe of podcasts and websites. Your pledges through Patreon, your donations through PayPal really do help keep things online and active and buzzing around here, so I do thank you for that. And your support helps me do these other projects, like getting the Ninjas episodes back online someplace for people to enjoy. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi, where you can pick a tier, any tier, and be eligible for perks. Every month, I pick a winning email address out of the electronic hat. Random number generators rule, yay. And that person gets to select from books, DVDs, Blu-rays, and 4Ks that I have, review materials here that I just don't have the space to keep. So all of the supporters and fans of the show get, you know, first dibs at some pretty cool stuff. So just one of the ways I'm thanking you guys for supporting and listening all these years. And if you'd like to support without committing to a monthly pledge, the link to use is paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. Another way you can support our efforts here is by shopping over at sliceofscifi.net. That is a curated shop, all affiliate links, so any purchases made through there will indeed kick back a few pennies our way. And I'm working on expanding the catalog over there, but it's mostly TV shows and movies, fun stuff we've come across over the years. I've been having a hard time finding some of the older stuff because it's the DVDs are either out of print or very rare and very expensive, and I would not do that to you guys. It's a physical media thing, I guess. Yeah, we need to have another physical media discussion sooner or later, but that's the gist of it. And yeah, I think that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next time. Take care.